Many Filipinos, or Asians for that matter, were told growing up that being a doctor was the best career. You get to save lives, but more importantly, you also get a ton of money and a lifetime of respect. How much of this is true, and how much of it is a trap? I'm Marguerite De Leon, and in this episode of I've Got an Opinion, Rappler's podcast on ordinary people speaking up on extraordinary issues, we talk to writer and newly licensed physician Ralph Fonte, who's not afraid to point out the many flaws in local medical culture. How toxic is it really? Let's find out.
Hi, Ralph. Thank you for joining us on this week's I've Got an Opinion.
Hi, Margie. Yes, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me, actually.
Yay. So how have you been feeling recently about all the, what do you call this, all the hullabaloo over the healthcare industry during the pandemic?
Well, like any self-respecting health professional, of course I feel outrage and disappointment. Mm-hmm. But honestly, it doesn't surprise me anymore. Because
right.
Given the government's propensity to deflect blame, it's disappointing but expected that they do this and somehow find a way to blame healthcare professionals who are at the forefront of the COVID response.
Mm-hmm.
They somehow found a way to blame us in spite of us criticizing, giving feedback in order to, you know, help the government make better decisions. Apparently, you can't do that these days anymore without being branded as revolutionary. So,
right.
I don't know.
Okay, so hopefully through this podcast, we can get a better idea of why you said that. Maybe this can help Naren. So first off, tell me more about your current career as a health professional.
So I'm a fairly new doctor. I graduated from the UP College of Medicine in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Then I took and passed the PLE, the Physician's Licensure Exam, on March 2019.
Okay.
Since then, I've been working as a freelance doctor. Some doctors would call it moonlighting, but essentially it's freelance physician work. So
How does that work? Sorry.
So I'm not actually, I'm self-employed, basically. I just look for postings with different companies. So ever since I started working, I've been a retainer at a private clinic. I work as a reliever in emergency rooms. I've also worked as a research assistant. So basically, I don't have an employer-employee relationship with companies.
Okay.
I function as a freelancer, basically. If they have a post that they need filling, I just come in as a freelance doctor, basically.
I never knew that. I never knew there were freelancers and doctors.
A lot of new doctors work as freelance doctors, but they call it moonlighting. So the term freelance doctor is rarely used, but
right.
Essentially that's what we do.
Okay, so why did you decide to get into medicine in the first place?
Okay, so because of many things back then.
Okay, bet.
I was a science geek back in high school and college, and I kind of liked learning about physiology and pathophysiology and pathology. Mm-hmm. And aside from that, I didn't really know what I wanted to do right after college. Like, I didn't want to work yet. I graduated really young. And aside from that, my parents have been basically convincing me to become a doctor ever since high school. So that got to me. So I decided, why not?
Doctors themselves?
No, they're actually engineers. But they've always wanted a doctor in the family. So I had pretty decent grades in college. So I decided to apply, and well, I got in. And yeah. It also helped that I romanticized doctors. Like, growing up, doctors are benevolent. They heal people. And I also read the book Surgeons Not Cry by Ting Tioco. So it's basically a memoir of sorts. It's creative nonfiction about his life as a doctor in training, and that helped me romanticize the profession a bit further. So all of those things led me to where I am now.
Okay, yeah. That's great. So I would assume that you are happy or okay with being a doctor?
Well, you know, I've come to terms with it. At some point, I wanted to quit medicine. Yeah, at some point, I really wanted to quit medicine. But
why?
I didn't like the medical culture, basically.
Okay, then that's why you're here in this podcast.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. So at a certain point, I got disappointed with how things were run in my training, and I wanted out. But unfortunately, in UP, we sign a contract, a return service agreement, stipulating that if I quit at any point during my training, I will have to reimburse the university and the state the whatever they spent on me, on my medical education. So I would have had to pay the full unsubsidized tuition fee of 5 years of medical education had I quit. So I didn't. So I had to stay because that's a fairly huge amount of money.
It's a trap.
Yeah, exactly. I was trapped. And well, I'm here now. I mean, I have a complicated relationship with medicine. I like getting to treat people and healing people, but at the same time, a lot of the system, the scaffold, the structure in which I'm working, a lot of it doesn't sit well with me. And I've had to contend with that ever since I was in med school. So, you know, I mean, I'm fairly young, but it's a pretty huge deal when you're in the system, when you're trying to survive on a daily basis inside the medical culture.
Okay, so let's get a little more specific into those issues. Mm-hmm. So let's start with parang studying pa lang to be a doctor. So what are the main issues you've seen when you were still a student?
Okay, so this is the foremost problem I saw when I was a student, meaning when I was in clerkship, which is fourth year med school, and internship,
right,
which is basically fifth year med school, is that they treat doctors in training as free labor. So basically, hospitals in the Philippines exploit young doctors-to-be as free labor. So clerks and interns don't earn any money, mm-hmm. but they're doing essential hospital work. So for instance, in PGH, when I was an intern, I checked patients, I inserted lines, I drew blood. PGH is essentially undermanned. That's basic universal mm-hmm. knowledge. So nurse-to-patient ratio is usually 1 to 20, 1 to 22 in the ER. The ideal is 1 to 6. But, right. you know, so there's the resources are limited. And that's where the students come in. The students basically act as free labor for the hospitals. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of essential hospital work, but we're not paid. Compare this to architectural interns and legal interns who, during internship, are paid for the tasks they perform. So right. medical interns are basically free labor. And it's not that the problem isn't that just that we're free labor. It's that we do more work than your average office worker. We go to work at 8:32, around 40, 80 hours at least a week, around 80 hours a week. So we do around 80 hours of work a week, even more because we have duties. So given that, I think it's really a system that exploits students as free labor, and I think that should change.
Right. You said earlier that lawyers and architectural interns are yeah. paid for their work. So what makes the medical interns different? Why are you guys being exploited while the others aren't?
Exactly. That is also my question. I don't have the answer to this. And it's just a sad fact that I have come to notice. I don't know how we'll be able to change this. But
have you ever asked?
No, actually. In PGH, I think they just say that they don't have the money.
Mm-mm.
And the patients are going to be the patients need care, so that's why they have to exploit interns, etc., etc. But I'm not really sure why this is allowed, but essentially I don't think it's because I think interns aren't necessarily considered employees.
Mm-mm.
Right, so mm-hmm. so we're still technically in training, and it's that gray area, it's that nebulousness. We're not employees of the hospital, but we're forced to work there in order to comply with the PRC requirements. So I think it's that. I think it's because we're not classified as laborers or employees.
I think it's also, like, I would guess it's also a matter of pang people saying that you're doing it out of the goodness of your heart, because pang healthcare is such a, what do you call this, pang as an essential service. So pang you're doing good, so you shouldn't care if you're getting paid or whatever.
Yeah. Actually, that's another thing, no? Parang that gaslighting that's going on.
But yeah.
Because you're always under stress, you're in a toxic environment, you're being exploited. But somehow you can't complain, because think about the patients. What about the welfare of the people we treat? I mean, I think it's unfair. It happens a lot, because like when we complain about our poor labor conditions, that's always a response. You have to do this because no one else is going to take care of the patients. And I think it's detrimental to both the patients and the healthcare workers, because by using the patients as hostages in order to force your laborers to work in less than ideal conditions, then you don't get the healthcare, the care that the healthcare professionals give to the patients aren't ideal or aren't as good as they should be.
Mm. Have you ever heard or seen fellow interns kind of speaking up publicly about these issues?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've seen people who spoken out publicly, like in 2016, I think, or 2017, the interns in PGH were complaining about the hospital's policy, and it became viral on social media. At that point, I think PGH wanted to admit, it had an admit all policy, basically. Every patient who goes to the ER for treatment has to be admitted regardless of the hospital's capacity. And at that time, I think because UP went through a shift in the academic year, the number of interns was reduced, and given that policy, parang the interns were overworked, and as a result, the patient care was far from ideal, and they took to social media to protest it. But the administration stepped in and tried to stifle the dissent by basically forcing the interns to take down their posts.
Oh, and they did.
And I think they did. I'm not really sure how that ended, but yeah, the administration stepped in and basically forced everyone to shut the hell up, because it's hurting the hospital's image. So instead of addressing the systemic, the problem, the hospital just decided to sweep it all under the rug. And that's basically what happens in a lot of places in medicine.
Mm. Okay, so internship pa lang yan. So how about when you became a licensed doctor? So what other issues did you learn upon getting licensed?
Okay, so upon getting licensed, so I'm not a resident right now, but so I was considering residency. And when I saw the salary rates of like residents in private hospitals,
mm-mm.
if you calculate the hourly rate, so you get paid per month, right? But as a medical resident, you're required a lot. Most residency programs require you to be on duty every 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So given that, if you calculate the salary on an hourly basis, it's barely above minimum wage.
Really?
And I think that's not fair, right? For someone who studied for 9 years in order to get a license, who is performing essential work, to earn almost minimum wage on a, like as a resident, it's unfair. And a lot of hospitals justify it by saying that, oh, but you're in training, you're benefiting from this. But the thing is, they're not recognizing the fact that without the residents, there will be no one to man the hospitals. Right. Ergo, the residents are performing essential labor for the hospital. And you're, by underpaying them, nialabag mo yung karapatan nila sa paggawa. Kasi hindi mo kinikilala yung halaga ng servisyong inilalagak nila dun sa hospital.
I'm guessing that's why you decided to be a moonlighter or freelancer.
Yeah, that's one of the factors. Well, also because when I was in med school, I realized I didn't like hospital work and hospital culture. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm considering getting into public health. So actually I might apply to the Doctors of the Barrios program later this year. And yeah, let's see where it goes from there.
Okay, that's cool. So let me rant a little bit since I have the opportunity to. So one of my pet peeves about healthcare professionals na I think has a deeper issue beneath it is when a doctor never respects your appointment time sa consultation. Like, it doesn't matter what kind of doctor you are or what the reason for your consultation is. Parang their secretary will tell you 10 o'clock and you'll meet them at noon if you're lucky. So what is the deal with that?
You know what? Okay, I can try to explain it because it keeps happening everywhere. Like,
right.
Even when we were med students, because of course our professors would be doctors, right? So I distinctly remember this one professor. He was going to teach a topic about otorhinolaryngology. So he was supposed to arrive at 8 a.m. The class was 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. He arrived at 9:45.
Oh my god!
Went in front of the class, said, "I'm sorry, I'm late," and started to lecture for 15 minutes. I mean, it's okay if you just didn't show up, but the thing is, he made us wait that long, and like, it's just blatant disrespect for someone else's time. I think traffic had something to do with it, and yeah, we know Manila traffic, but at the same time, a lot of doctors don't respect the time of other people. I mean, it happens to me as well as a patient, and I think part of it is because they're so busy, like a lot, because doctors are basically self-employed. Their clinics are their own businesses. Mm-hmm. And a lot of doctors have clinics in multiple hospitals. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of doctors end up going late, because like in another, they'd be coming from a clinic in another hospital. Then if the patients there become toxic or if they get held up, then they'll be delayed for their appointment to the next clinic, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one problem. I think it's because of the nature of the practice of medicine in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. It's because doctors are forced to set up clinics in different hospitals in order to earn money. I think it's because of that setup that doctors are trying to maximize their profits because they were exploited in training. So they're trying to maximize their profits. And so they're trying to be in too many places at one time. I don't necessarily think it's malice. Like, I don't think doctors necessarily think I'll be late so that the patients think I'm important. I don't think it's because of that. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of the system. Like, they're forced to hop from one hospital to another, and the delays just pile up, and yeah, that happens.
So pang in essence, pang burnt out lang talaga sila. So, like,
yeah, burnt out, I guess. Less burnt out than stretched out, like stretched thinly.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Among
yeah.
all their commitments.
Speaking of what do you call this? Maximizing profits. And then earlier you said that doctors here don't get paid enough. How come, as a layperson, parang my idea of becoming a doctor means getting rich?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a scam.
Okay.
So why is it a scam? Not all doctors become rich. Think about it. you spend 4 years in college. Mm-hmm. How much is that? Spend another 5 years in med school.
Mm-hmm.
$100,000 a year in a private med school.
Right.
How much is that? Plus books, plus food, plus medical equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Then you become a general practitioner. And in the Philippines, no one really trusts general practitioners. I'm a general practitioner and I get it a lot. Like, people would ask me what my specialization is, and they feel like I'm an incomplete doctor because I don't have a specialization.
Right.
So after you become a GP, people go into residency. And as we discussed earlier, like, your income in residency isn't big. It's bigger in public hospitals, but in private hospitals, it's negligible. Basically, pinapaaral ka pa rin ng parents mo. So that's another figure, 4 years, or five if you're undergoing surgical training. So how much does total education cost? You start earning when you're, what, 28, 30? And at first, you're going to start up your practice. You're going to try to attract patients, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to take a while before your practice gets on the ground running, before you're earning a lot of money. So what does that mean? It's possible to become rich, but the question is when. So a lot of doctors can become rich only after they're 40 or 45.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah, there's a huge discrepancy between the concept of, like, doctors as rich people versus the actual reality. The thing is, a lot of doctors become doctors because their families are rich. Like, it's hard to afford med school if your family isn't well off, if your family is not middle class or above. I mean, there are scholarships, sure, but at the same time, there's a lot of gastos involved in studying medicine. So, mm-hmm. ayun nga, parang, yeah, you can earn a lot in medicine, but it takes a long time. Like, half your life has already passed and you're still not earning a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the effort that you exerted.
So, what you're describing is, like, sobrang business talaga siya. Na it's like setting up a restaurant and just kind of hoping it works out in a way.
Yeah. In the Philippines kasi. So let me just clarify that. In the Philippines, a lot of medical practice is parang ano, self-business, parang self-proprietorship. No? So mm-hmm. you set up your own clinic and you get patients to ask you for advice, for medical advice. So, sa ibang bansa kasi, like in Europe, when I was in Spain, I learned that a lot of hospitals employ their doctors to hold clinics there, to perform surgeries, etc., etc. So basically, they're employed by the hospital. So the hospital pays them a certain salary regardless of how many patients they see in a day. In the Philippines, because the dominant practice is private medical practice, meaning you set up your own clinic, mm-hmm. that you own. So, ang nangyayari, sarili mong business yon. So, naghahanap ka ng pasyente na lalapit sa'yo. So, you build your own patient base. You try to mm-hmm. get by with word of mouth, etc., etc. So, basically, you build your clientele. Parang restaurant niya.
Yeah.
And, ayun, so, mag-isa ka. So, mm-hmm. kung kinulang ka ng pasyente tiningnan ngayon, hindi ka kikita.
Yeah.
So, ganun yung private practice sa Pilipinas. Although, may mga group practice na ngayon, may mga consultancy sa iba't ibang places, parang yun pa rin yung predominant strain. And in med school, they reinforce that a lot. Like, a lot of our lecturers would say, oh, when you get into private practice, then you get into private practice. So, it's the dominant strain of medical practice in the Philippines.
Mm-mm. Given how the medical culture here is so pang connected to business and stuff like that. I'm sure, like, ethics gets in, pang comes into play sometimes.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, well, sorry.
So, go ahead. So,
pang, I'm sure that some doctors end up facing certain ethical conundrums, like, because they have to make a living. So, have you ever experienced that, or have you been exposed to that kind of ethical dilemma?
Okay. I'll preface this with something. I think most doctors are ethical.
Okay.
At least try their best to be as ethical as they can in a broken system, like the Philippine healthcare system.
Right.
So I think most doctors are decent and have the best interests of their patients at heart. But like any other profession, the practice of medicine also has economic concerns. No? Gets ko yung sabi mo na nagdawadating yung mga ethical conundrums somewhere there. And I'd also like to say that parang in any profession, ethical conundrums will pop up because of the economic considerations.
Sure. Like
profit over ethics, right?
Yeah.
Have I encountered? Yes, I've encountered doctors who would who own a pharmacy and basically tell their patients to buy the
medicine
drugs from that pharmacy. Yeah, I've encountered doctors who misprescribe antibiotics, who would prescribe antibiotics even though it's not necessary. However, I think they're only few and far between. I think in any profession, parang there will be bad eggs.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen, most doctors do care about their patients, even though these ethical breaches happen every now and then.
Mm-mm. So given all that, parang given that you're fairly sure that your fellow doctors also parang see the problems before them, parang how do you suggest tackling these problems? Parang what do you think parang ultimately needs to be done in order to effect change in this toxic system?
This is a tricky question because I think that it needs both an internal change as well as an external change. So what do I mean by that? So culture is resistant to change. Now, people grow up in certain systems, in certain patterns of behavior, and that's what they stick to. And I think because medicine is the medical culture is a culture, a lot of the older doctors are resistant to change because people in general are resistant to change. What do I think has to happen? I think doctors my age and younger have to be more vocal about the ways we see the system can improve. Mm-hmm. We should be more upfront, more steadfast about the things we believe have to change in the system.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficult part of this is that the system is so hierarchical that if you're a young doctor, you're basically disempowered. It's hard to speak to power because they're your bosses, they're your colleagues. And I think what has to change is that younger doctors have to be more vocal, have to find the courage to speak mm-hmm. out and force the change that they want to see. Like, the system has to be less hierarchical. Younger doctors don't have to be exploited. The working hours should be more humane, should adhere to standards we see in other countries. So I think doctors have to realize that the things they want for themselves won't be given, but they have to demand it and fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I think the Philippine healthcare system has to be overhauled as well. Because I think like private practice is not good for both doctors and patients. I think we have to look at the Philippine healthcare system and make it more responsive to the needs of patients and healthcare professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So, ayun, parang, like, there should be legislation as well stipulating that doctors in training cannot be exploited, that they should be paid a certain amount, or
right.
they should have these benefits as laborers in the hospitals. They should have a certain amount of leaves, even though they're first-year residents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it will take that doctors fighting for their rights as well as external pressure. So in the form of legislation. So I think those are the two ways we can change the system.
Do you think that can come anytime soon, like say in the next decade?
Well, I don't think so. I hope so, but I'm not getting my hopes up.
Right.
I hope we all survive, though. I mean, COVID's not going away anytime soon, and the government is failing us as a profession. So.
Right. So speaking of that, speaking of COVID, so parang the issues related to this pandemic, do you think, how will they affect these more ingrained traditional parang toxicity in the medical sphere?
Well, actually, I think it's exposing the weaknesses of the system right now.
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah. Well, in a sense, I think it's a good thing because people are able to see it and are able to identify it. Because, for instance, I have friends who work at a certain hospital, and basically they have qualms with the way the administration is handling the entire COVID response. Mm-hmm. And instead of the administration actually listening to them, the administration tried to just shut them up, basically. They're forbidden to talk to the media, etc., etc. And I think this is like emblematic of the entire problem with medicine, with the medical culture. We're not listening to the younger doctors who are at the forefront of the fight because some people are older, because some people have positions of power. But the thing is, we should be listening to these people because they're the ones experiencing the limitations of the system firsthand. So I don't know how that's going to change. If my colleagues don't speak out, it's not going to change because it's just going to get buried under the rug. Doctors are trained to suck it up, basically. Tanggap lang. It's for the patients. And it's true. People will die if we stop going to work. But at the same time, it can't carry on this way. Our welfare is at stake. And if we don't do anything, it's just going to be a toxic cycle of exploitation that's going to go on until humanity kills itself.
Okay. So that was a very bright note.
I am so sorry.
No. Gives me the perfect opportunity to segue to our beauty queen question, our last question, which is, what advice would you give someone who's thinking of taking up medicine?
Don't be kidding. Okay, my advice. This is my genuine advice to anyone who is thinking of taking up a career in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure the one making the decision is yourself.
Okay.
It doesn't matter if your parents want you to be a doctor. It doesn't matter if your girlfriend wants you to be a doctor. It doesn't matter if your pet dog is begging you to be a doctor.
Oh, it matters.
No, it has to come from yourself. Because somewhere along the way, if you find that it's not for you, you're going to regret it. You're going to regret being forced by someone else to make a life-changing decision. Medicine isn't a game. People's lives are on the line. The training is intense. You're not going to sleep for, I don't know, maybe the rest of your life. You're not going to get a decent night's rest. You're going to be on 24-hour duties taking care of patients. You're going to wake up at 4 in the morning and you have to save someone's life. Mm-hmm. And this kind of decision has to come from yourself. So that's the most important thing. You have to love medicine for what it is. It has to be you. It can't be your parents, your grandparents, the people around you. Mm-hmm. The decision to become a doctor, to take someone else's life into your own hands, that must come from you. From a place of genuine care and nerdiness, of course. But essentially, the decision to be a doctor must come from the self.
Okay, perfect. That's the perfect way to end this conversation. Thank you, Ralph.
I'm glad. I hope I made sense.
Oh, yes, you did, of course. Yun, so guys, that is our show. Thank you again, Ralph Fuente, for being here with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, if you would like to guest on I've Got an Opinion or want to submit an opinion piece to Rappler, just email opinion@rappler.com. I'm Marguerite De Leon. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
next time, huwag ninyo akong pariginigin ng revolution. Naku, Diyos ko. Yan ang mas delikado sa COVID. Eh, kung mag-revolution kayo, you will give me the free ticket to stage a counter-revolution. How I wish you would do it.
Don't understand what President Rodrigo Duterte is saying? Want to know the story behind his words? Listen to Seat of Power, Rappler's political podcast about the Duterte presidency, hosted by me, Pia Renada, Rappler's Malacanang beat reporter.